Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It's almost Wednesday, July 31st, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program tonight, recapping of what you will perceive as last night's debate, but what we know was tonight's debate. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is 10:46 p.m. Eastern Time. We are recording tonight's episode. We're not going to be in during the day today. We will not have a live show until tonight, which is actually tomorrow, Wednesday night. At 7:45, we will start.
So for the no-stakes debate tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow night's no-stakes debate. We can walk all over that crap.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
It's going to be a water.
And although it's going to be interesting because they're actually, well, let's table that. Because I actually think there are big stakes tomorrow night, right? Because you have the front runner, Joe Biden on the debate tomorrow night. But okay, as well,
bless
as,
me, Father, for I have sinned.
As far as Wednesday night's debate, if for whatever reason you didn't watch it, and maybe you didn't because we only had about 7,000 or 8,000 people on our Twitch stream, there's no reason why that should be the case.
We were the number three in the just chatting.
And
vertical.
We should say that we had a YouTube stream, but I had a feeling, and my whole thing now is I trust my gut. We got hit with a copyright strike, and we used our backup thing, which is good because on our backup channel, which we haven't used in years, to stream live, we can't stream live for 90 days. But that doesn't matter because we never do that. And so
yeah,
there,
that's our burner account.
That's our burner account. So tonight on the debate, Michael's had a beer, so watch out, folks. Listen, it's 90 degrees for everybody. I got news for you. There's no way you're possibly exhausted more than I am. There's just no way. I'm sorry.
There's just no way.
I actually believe that.
I totally believe that. But you live in exhaustion.
That's true. That's sort of, I swim in that ocean.
Yes.
Tonight, John Hickenlooper, Steve Bullock, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, Tim Ryan, Marianne Williamson, John Delaney, and Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. Okay, let's go around and we'll do a quick round of everybody's thoughts, and then we'll get into more specifics. Or no, you know what? Let's just go into specifics as we go. I think tonight, now obviously, look, everybody knows our biases around here, but I thought Bernie did excellent. I thought Warren did excellent. At different points, they both shined as the way that they do. The only other thing I would say, like that comes out of that, is that Warren, it seems to me, made a very, and I'm not sure how Bernie would have done the reverse. I don't know how that would have worked, but Warren made a very subtle but distinct appeal to Bernie's supporters, it seems to me. She opened by saying that we need structural change. She closed by saying we need structural change. At one point when we heard the closing, we were making a joke that she was stealing Bernie's lines. She may or may not have been, but the point is she was clearly appealing very subtly by saying, I'm sorry, the words structural to me You never hear in a debate. I don't even know if we heard that from Bernie, frankly.
The only other person talking like that is Buttigieg.
Not to mention, she also said she needs a grassroots movement to help her achieve this stuff. And that is absolutely a Bernie line.
In that same line at the end.
Yep. And that is one key difference that we've been hammering on between the two of them up until now.
And I don't think it's transferable. I mean, to me, obviously, again, I don't think it's just that Bernie's the best candidate. I legitimately think he represents something different. And I think it does actually come across because she does have to play catch up on some of these really key things. But I think the bigger takeaway, like, I think that distinction is important. I'm happy to make it. But they basically, if I accept the CNN frame that this was liberals versus moderates, or I would say a progressive and a social Democrat versus dishonest reactionaries with really poor media training and the CNN moderators.
Very difficult to put in the Chiron.
Yeah, very difficult to put in the Chiron. They won together. And they did actually, you know, what we said, which is that, of course, they shouldn't go up against each other. I think she did try to make some subtle encroachments, and I think he kind of, you know, held his turf. But on the other hand, they took some very demonstrable moments to have each other's back on substantive issues against all the other candidates' lies. And I thought Bernie did great. I'm thrilled. I think he actually had the most. I'm starting to learn to train myself to watch these things for clippable moments. And so even on the foreign policy one, where I thought his answer absolutely could have been stronger and he should have talked about Yemen, I realized from a clip perspective, the difference is he's a pathological liar.
Right.
Done. There's the clip. I wrote the damn bill.
Right.
Strong, relentless, clear. And then the other thing I just would say is that, I mean, talk about manufacturing consent. I mean, this really was going back to the Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman stuff. I think Edward Herman. CNN was appalling. And the Jake Tapper first strike thing on Warren was one of the most obscene things I've ever seen.
Worse than any of the Republican debates.
Worse by far.
Let's try and keep it general, Jamie, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper so that we can stretch this.
Yeah, on a more general level, I was kind of scared after the last debate that I watched Bernie in that maybe something about the format or whatever wasn't allowing him to do as well as he should be doing and as we all wanted him to do. I thought he did much, much better tonight. That it was really great to see Bernie and Warren working together, despite some very hostile questions from the panel of bootlickers assembled by CNN. And that just makes me feel a little bit optimistic that our candidate can stand up to the, you know, the tricks, the dirty tricks of the lamestream media. And this movement that started a long time ago, actually, that has a lot to do with the financial crisis. It has a lot to do with Occupy. It has a lot to do with just the growing immiseration of average working class people all over this country. The media, they have some power, but they don't have all the power, and they really can't stop it. Like, the power is there. The momentum is there.
Now, what makes you say that they're bootlickers as opposed to people who are actually wearing the boots as well?
Precisely.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they certainly have their class interests that they're protecting.
I mean, it was pure class interest.
They wear the boots and they lick the boots.
Guess who at the Washington Post tweeted this out? Why do I always have to turn down the sound when Bernie answers?
Jennifer Rubin.
Glenn Kessler.
I mean,
I'd like to fact check again.
They're going to make a lot about him yelling and this and that. I just want to remind you, this is the way that they did with Dean. And the idea that someone would get excited on stage is problematic to them in some way. It's offensive in some way. I think Bernie helped himself. I think he was much better in this debate. I think Warren was better throughout the debate.
Yeah,
it was
actually
great.
Better too.
And I said this earlier, the sensation of watching the sort of the power, the attention on the most progressive people on the stage is a dynamic that I have never experienced in a Democratic debate in the history of me being conscious of Democratic debates. I mean, it's just not happened in this way. And it really, like, you know, there was a quality to this where if you were to take the sound off, and there's going to be a lot of talk like Delaney helped himself today. Well, of course he did, because he got more questions. Have we seen a breakdown of the talking times yet? Somebody's got to do it. It's going to be shocking when you contemplate the idea that Delaney, as far as I can tell, has not even rated at 1% in the polls at this point. And he got as much time to talk probably more than anyone.
You know, it's possible that he didn't get more talking time than the good candidates. It just felt that way because every time he opened his mouth,
it could have been more or less
we
equal.
Were just
but
disgusted.
The point is that it's no way commensurate.
No, I mean, he got thrown to a lot.
Doesn't seem right, but whatever.
Okay, so he got 10-31, Warren and Sanders. Okay, maybe, so he got about half, but I mean, he got, wow.
You know what? He's honestly just, you know what? You're right, Jamie. It's because he's so fucking obnoxious.
Maybe it's just I was
any
so
talking
annoyed
time
every time
seem
he
like
up.
Too much.
That's
it
from
felt
him.
Like
I'm surprised.
They were always
I'm surprised by
him,
that.
Though.
But okay, be that as it may, still, you had Delaney there. He was a good foil. They used him as Joe Biden. And he didn't, frankly, I mean, I just, it is clear. And I tweeted out at one point, Jake, my plan is called Medicare for something that sounds like a Bernie's more popular plan, but it's not, because that was the sort of the tenor of the debate. Everyone was trying to sound like they were either Warren or Sanders, but just slightly more palatable. And frankly, just like in a general election, people are going to vote for the real Republican instead of the Republican light. In this instance, you have people chasing their policies, and I think that is going to, I think it's going to help both Warren and Bernie. And I think it's, you know, that's what tomorrow night is so is going to be so fascinating. Let's play the well, at one point, I think Warren had alluded to it, but Bernie made it very explicit. There are going to be commercials tonight on this very broadcast from the pharmaceutical industry, arguing contrary and fighting against what you know, what we're saying here. Let's watch what that ad was. Here it is. And I should tell you that as a professional actor myself, I didn't do much on camera commercial work. I did mostly a film and television.
Shade.
Nice.
That's all right. Nice. That's all right. That's good for them. That's fine. You know, it's not like I did an Arby's. Anyways, here is the pharmaceutical ad. These are all paid actors.
We come from different walks of life.
But we agree on one important thing.
We don't want to be forced into a one-size-fits-all government insurance system.
Same buzzwords from 30 years
ago. Politicians call it Medicare for All, Medicare buy-in, or the public option.
But they mean the same thing. Higher taxes or higher premiums, lower quality care.
Politicians and bureaucrats in control of our health care.
Oh, dude.
We can't afford one-size-fits-all plans.
We need to fix what's broken, not start over.
They got nothing.
There you go. So those are the exact same talking points that John Delaney delivered during the...
Jake Tapper delivered.
Jake Tapper. I mean, it was shocking. And good for Bernie to sort of like... I don't know that we would have picked up on these ads had he not made it a point. I mean, it really does make it really explicit.
Well,
doesn't
he
it?
Did the same thing with the really funny thing that he did at the Post a couple of weeks ago, where he just said this is sponsored by Bank of America. And I think that this is interesting, because I, to some extent, I think the kind of worry about Sanders is noise, because I really do think that they are building a significantly enough different kind of campaign in terms of sort of movement building and organizing. But what did disturb me in the last couple of months was that they stopped doing what they did out of the gate, which is when they went to Center for American Progress and they sent that letter basically saying, like, look, guys, if you're going to do this, we have people too. We can push back at you if you're just going to release trash about him. And I think the dialectic of Sanders is that they've done that. And then at the same time, they've also wanted to say, look, if you're supporting us, be polite to people on Twitter, and we want to have like a kind of good-natured campaign. And I think in the last that there might have been a kind of overcorrection the last couple of weeks, and it's nice to see, or the last couple of months, it's been nice to see Bernie taking advantage of his actually very avuncular personality to just say, like, to push back on this stuff in a way that actually is kind of charming.
This is the thing that I think why initially, and I think there was some validity to it, but I think it, you know, I think when push came to shove, it wasn't the case. And with all due respect, Jamie, there was some talk that Beto was going to draw from Bernie because Beto had a quality of being unique and not of the establishment because in a subtextual way, because he was just different and he was unique and authentic.
Such a different rich white guy up there.
Well, I think ultimately what happened is that sort of facade fell apart and he couldn't maintain it. But
it's so good when he falls apart.
You know, like they're going to be, let's play this thing about the damn bill. Now, you can find on Twitter, and you're undoubtedly going to hear this on CNN tomorrow, and there's going to be people on MSNBC who are going to say the same thing. Like, I was really put off when he said, damn, Bill. I there are kids watching, and damn, like, whatever it is.
Not
like,
the D word.
He's too reminiscent of Trump. He's being crass and this and that.
The crassness is what people like about Trump.
Well, forget about what people like about Trump. I think what people like is they perceive him as authentic, even when he's lying. I mean, I go back to that interview that we did with the mesmerism, where it's like, oh, I know the guy's a liar, but he's lying for us, not against us. And I think Trump wears it on his sleeve. People can see that people aren't fooled by him. They like the show. They think it's authentic. And I think it is authentic. I think he's a raving lunatic. I don't think he's any different behind closed doors other than maybe using more, swear words for black people than he does in public. But more or less, I think he's the same. And I think when Bernie does stuff like this, even though you'll hear the people in the middle sort of like complain, like it's a little bit crass, I think this stuff actually gives him a lot of like meta points.
Classic bypass point, right?
Yeah,
there.
This is him responding to, I think it was Ryan talking about what's in the Medicare for All bill.
You don't know.
Second
that.
Of all,
you don't know that.
Second
Bernie.
Of all,
we'll come to you in a second.
I do know, and I wrote the damn bill.
He's talking about what happens. I can't remember specifically.
It's union. It's about,
oh, right. What, yeah, what happens?
Union healthcare.
Now, look, here's the bottom line with the unions and the healthcare bill. They're going to make it. And Tim Ryan was trying to argue this. And it's just not a strong argument that you're going to lose benefits that you have under union health insurance. And the benefits that you get under Bernie's plan is not going to be sufficient to replace it. That's not the case. I mean, look, I'm sure there must be a union insurance somewhere for someone, and I really do think it's a very small set of people, that could be conceivably better than what a Medicare for All bill would be, but that's not what's going on here. What's going on is that unions are afraid that the one sort of asset that they can offer people to join a union in an era where they aren't able to get union dues and agency fees as a matter of course because it's a union shop is offering them health care. They are afraid of this. Now, I understand the fear, and it could actually be a legitimate concern that it will make unions less enticing. But I can also tell you that just in my experience, just in outside of everything, is that people who've done one thing for a long time in one way think it's catastrophic if it stops being that. The bottom line is, if the unions don't have to require from their employers to pay into a health insurance fund, they're either going to get more money or even at the same wages that they get now, they're going to have less copays. Because I just know, I mean,
I think you're definitely right about some people in unions, but more aggressive labor union organizing types all say that if you liberate people from that level of threat, I mean, I get it's an enticement, but also the overall structural threat of employees controlling your health insurance, they're going to be a hell of a lot more likely to organize.
And not to
that's
mention,
right. That's right.
If your health plan is off the table, you'll be able to use your bargaining power for other things like wages.
Exactly. Right, exactly. Right. But I'm just saying that I think like union leadership, you've done something in one way for 25 years, 30 years, whatever, how long you've been in leadership. The idea of doing it some other way, it's completely unrelated. But this is what I think about when I think about this lesson was shooting beat cops for NBC Studios. And we wanted to shoot on digital video, and they had never shot anything on digital video. And the guy said to me, the head of NBC production said, "I think this is a suicide mission." And I was like, "What?
Wow!"
And so within probably 18 months of him saying that to me, half of their production was on digital video. I mean, of course, it was easy, but it was just he'd never done it that way, and they were afraid. And so that's the way that works.
Union leadership is not always right about everything.
Well, that's right.
And if you don't support single-payer health care, you're a scab. I'm sorry.
And let's put it this way. If you cannot trust Bernie Sanders to do the right thing for unions, there is no politician who you can. I mean, there is no politician who exists who you can trust more and having unions' interest at the forefront than Bernie Sanders.
See, that's another very sketchy part of this whole line of attack is that it's also predicated. I mean, once you strip away the fear mongering, it's like John Delaney and Joe Biden care more about labor issues than Bernie Sanders. Sure.
Let's play this clip of Elizabeth Warren because this is the one where almost all of us, I feel like. If we didn't articulate this, which I think if we didn't articulate this, it was all sort of like at the forefront of our minds. And on some level, this is like, you got to give it up for Warren's staff here.
Oh, this is great.
Because this was clearly a line that she knew that she was going to deliver at one point. And it's clearly a line, like I'm convinced that the staffers in Bernie's campaign were like, God, how did we not make sure this was a line that was delivered?
This is so great.
This is John Delaney going on and on about how like they're so aspirational. I'm offering a completely unambitious plan that probably has an equal chance of getting passed, but it sounds like it has more of a chance of getting passed. And it's the important part is it has no ambition. And this is what Elizabeth Warren shot back with.
I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for.
That smile. It got me.
Remember to smile. Remember to smile, John.
She got you, John.
John, remember to smile.
John, she wasn't supposed to wash you.
John shouldn't smile.
John.
he should take the smile
Stop
out of the repertoire.
Looking yeah, like I got hit with
I
a 2x4, John.
Well.
This look on Delaney's face, can we freeze it? Can we freeze it? Because Delaney's face, like right here. Keep going. Go a little further. Right there. That face happened like four times tonight where Man. It was like he just got, it was either Warren or Bernie basically took a 2x4 and smacked it right. You can almost see the imprint of the 2x4 right in his forehead, just above the eyebrows. The 2x4
hits
him. You
can almost see like little canaries flying around his head.
He looked like somebody just passed healthcare.
What's going to be fascinating is I want you to go on, and of course now most people are going to hear this tomorrow, 12 hours after the debate. But go back onto Twitter, look for writers from the New York Times, the Washington Post, people from CNN, MSNBC, I would imagine some, but not as many on CNN. I'm on MSNBC. You'll see some right-wingers talking about this, how this, the sleeper winner was John Delaney. And I want you to count those up. I want you to just take a full assessment of those. And then look at where he has absolutely zero bounce in the polls. And in fact, what's ultimately going to be happening, now I may be wrong, but I think ultimately what's going to happen is he is going to have been essentially like contemplate the idea of a pole vault. Right. And when you're running down the track, heading towards the place where you get a vault, You stick the pole in the ground.
Right.
John Delaney is that patch of dirt that the pole goes in. And I'm convinced that all of the bump that Warren and Bernie are going to get, because I think they're actually going to get a bump.
I agree.
From, not from each other, from other from places.
Other candidates.
Other candidates. Other
I think specifically maybe she from Harris and him from Biden, either way. But I mean, I agree with you. I think it was a great
We
got
to wait. That's and that and brings we'll us how, yeah. to what why right. tomorrow night is actually, right. as much as we don't have terrible excitement about the candidates, why tomorrow night's going to be so interesting. Because if Joe Biden stumbles tomorrow night, because I will say this about the performance of both both Warren and Sanders tonight. Not only from a political standpoint did I like their programmatic approach, but they both seemed incredibly confident with a tremendous amount of energy. When you compare this to Joe Biden's energy, because they're in the same age bracket, essentially, it is stunning to believe that these people are basically cohorts. And they had the energy. They both had the fight that supposedly people think you need with Donald Trump. You know, every time you had John Delaney with his dumb grin on his face, that was him basically saying, I just lost. And there's no images of Bernie or Warren doing that.
No, hell there's no. None. And I think, too, the other thing I just to add to that is that if it doesn't work with Delaney, I think the governor of Montana will be the other one that will get the ridiculous, like, he has an interesting message set, because Hickenlooper and Tim Ryan are simply unsellable products.
Right.
You can never pretend.
Take them off the market, guys.
Yeah, take them off the market. And I will say the other danger that I see, because I'm very anti-Buttigieg, and I thought his first debate performance was very poor. Tonight, I thought he did very well, and I thought he did what he's sort of supposed to do. And I would actually
he's making some plans for himself.
Check him out relative to Harris, because I actually was feeling tonight that Harris's biggest weakness is that she is too transparently insincere. She's very good in a lot of ways, but she's so not good at her spinning. And Pete Buttigieg is actually much better at appearing to be all things to all people. So I think he might have actually hurt her a little bit in that weird center-right mid-tier. And Beto's done.
Yeah, Beto. I forgot that he was
toast,
in the debate.
Man.
Yeah.
He just needs to give up and move into my house.
He wasn't as bad as the first debate, but it was
sleep,
the first.
You can sleep on a pallet of hay in the closet.
He wasn't as bad as the first debate, but he needed to be much better. And basically came in and met all expectations, which at this point were so low that it was like that they were actually almost negative. You know, like I honestly do not remember one vaguely memorable thing that he said tonight.
No.
He has, I don't like to get too performative, but it really did feel like Beto forgot the part. Like, it's almost like he was doing this this Broadway review for months and months and months and months. And he went out there, and one night he like tripped and forgot his lines and then got terrified. And when he got back out there, he forgot the character that he was supposed to be.
The one thing I remember
from
Beto is when he started talking about Texas, and I immediately stopped listening to what he said the rest of the answer and said, you should just run for Senate, right. You big dork.
Right.
I think that I know we shouldn't waste too much time on him, but I do just want to say, because people didn't embarrass themselves by comparing Beto to Obama. And I said right out of the gate, as someone who's, you know, obviously politically quite a critic of Obama, or policy-wise, politically maybe a supporter or a defender, but Obama, when people said when he was running for president that this guy is so young and he has no experience, and as soon as he gets hit around a little bit, and when Obama ran for president against Hillary Clinton and John McCain, every single adversity he faced, whatever else you say about him, he not only exceeded, he basically was able to transform to his asset.
Yes.
Like across the board. Beto.
He was like Firestorm. Not, when he got faced by something, he absorbed the energy and then it came his own.
And Beto is just, he's got tremendous skills and resilience. And comparing Beto to that is just like people embarrass themselves.
I can definitely see the appeal of the wounded guy who's right? Like, you know, yeah. I can see that. But I don't want him as president.
Well, me neither, Sam.
Right. But
yeah, that's not what Jamie's suggesting.
No, I think we can. All right.
Jesse, Jamie is part of the.
The only other thing that I thought was interesting about there was a funny moment where Hickenlooper said to Bernie, like, "Look, there are mayors and governors up here. We know what it takes." And then Bernie goes, "I was a mayor for many years," and Hickenlooper was like, "Oh yeah, okay, all right, sorry, you were right about
I
that."
I love the fact that the whole, like, we have experienced people also managed to just, like, I'm the one who's I was total technical mastery. I don't have time for ideology. Oh, you were a mayor.
Right, okay.
Should have thought of that before I launched a lame
sorry.
Attack.
All right.
My bad.
Forget about that. The other thing I noticed, too, was Delaney. And this is relevant, not because I think Delaney's going to be around very long. I think Delaney's going to have a couple of days, and it's going to be very uncomfortable for the staff that told him to quit in August. They said to him a couple of weeks ago, the reporting was, quit in August. They're going to have to, like, my guess is, like, they're texting each other now, his staff, and saying, like, maybe we should just lay low because he's going to think that he's got it. He's, like, he's going to stay in the race. Let's just wait for the polling because how should we handle this? We can tell him he did great, but it's just not your time. And with that said, I do think it's possible that Biden's people are looking at Delaney and saying what worked and what didn't work, right? And because I think certainly CNN was using him as a surrogate for Biden.
I agree.
And at one point, I just want to flag this. After, I think, Bernie accused Delaney from profiting from healthcare. Do we have that? Let's play that.
That was beautiful.
But also, as Delaney turns away, Delaney said, I think you're against the private sector, which is, you know.
How dare you?
Well, I mean.
Well, that's where it's going to go.
That's where it's going to go. Like. The idea that in the Democratic primary you would get this type of stuff is
ironically
problematic.
Yeah.
Here's that moment.
Maybe you did that and made money off of health care, but our job is to run a nonprofit health care system. Furthermore.
There's that smile. There's that 2x4 smacked across his face. Sorry, John Delaney. Warren had a great, I'm just looking at my notes. Warren had a great, run on, Addy, what's his last name back?
Addy Barkin,
who is, who first got famous, I think, by questioning, was it Ted Cruz on a flight, somebody on a flight. And, he has MS.
Yeah,
I think it is. And, the guy has been a tireless, advocate for healthcare in this country. And, I thought she made a very, very strong appeal, emotional appeal early on that really resonated. Those are the points of this. I think it's going to be fascinating to see not only how both Warren and Sanders come out of this, but what happens tomorrow night. Because I feel like this puts pressure on Harris and Booker. And remember, tomorrow night is also Bill de Blasio. And Bill de Blasio is like, he's like in Bullworth mode right now. Okay.
Totally. Chris Christie?
No.
In 2016?
No, know what Bullworth is?
No, I don't get the reference.
Bullworth is the, oh my God, I'm so old. What's his face? Did the movie, Warren Beatty did a movie about a politician who thought that he was dying. And he just goes off. And, I feel like de Blasio is in this mode where he's like, there's nothing I can do that's going to hurt me. Like, I have nowhere. Like, he is still running, you know, to the extent that he even wants to be mayor anymore. I don't know if he does or doesn't, but, like, he has a very unambiguous role, I think, in his mind. And so he's going to go to Biden super hard.
Yeah.
And I think Harris, and he may go at Harris and Booker, and Harris and Booker are going to feel like they need to go at Biden super hard. And frankly, like, I don't know if Biden can handle four or five people going at him in this way.
I want to caution. I just want to say, like, Biden is still in a, like, his support is still not evaporated. And so I don't take any of course, I want to destroy Biden. But Biden continues to be more resilient than, you know, people might have anticipated. And I will say tomorrow, I don't think, unless it's really just the fact that he's actually, like, not physically up for doing this, unless that's the case, tomorrow...
I think he has Parkinson's.
I'm joking. If you look at the way he walked on stage,
he's got it's this very weird look on
very,
his face.
And it's very, and it's sort of sallow. No, but I think tomorrow he is inevitably...
He's just a bad campaigner, though.
I don't know if he's going to have a better... night than he did last time.
I
want to play that. I really want to play the expectations games on this because I think he's going to have a better night than he did. And I think that they're looking
tonight,
the way the
press
works.
Tonight made me excited.
Yes.
For tomorrow night in a way that I would not have anticipated.
Well, because they did so well.
I think they did so well. Like it was just
my notes is I think this is the best case scenario for how Bernie and Warren would synergistically run campaigns.
Absolutely. I mean, just so exciting to see this type of power coming from this type of policy set on a debate stage. And I think, you know, like it's conceivable, if not the next round of debates, certainly two debates from now, they're going to be up there against Biden. And I think from their perspective, and it makes sense to me, their primary objective, get Biden out of the race. Like if this is Survivor, mm-hmm. right? If this is Survivor, they are going to stay in an alliance until Biden is gone. And when Biden's gone, then you're down to the final, you know, four or whatever it is. I'm using Survivor jargon now. That's when they go at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask, like, here's where I get a little bit dangerously close to blaming the electorate. How many times does Joe Biden need to wet his pants on stage to not be the front runner anymore? Because it seems like he shouldn't be now, and yet he still is.
I have one note I think is relevant to people who both thought that Russia impeachment is played too much by Democrats and people who think it's very important is that it wasn't brought up once, even in the Democrats' opening and closing statements.
Oh, that's
so
true.
I think we can maybe take some air out of those tires
on
both
God.
Directions.
We had completely forgotten about it.
I'm still a little traumatized from the Mueller hearings the other day.
I'm sorry, I don't recall.
The media might fixate on it, but the Democrats didn't in the midterms, and they're not now.
I think from the perspective of I'm surprised they didn't get a question about it. To be honest with you, it's sort of shocking in a way. I guess it's just a notion of how CNN wants to move on from it. It's actually now that you raise it, it's sort of shocking that they did not raise a question about it. But at the same time, it didn't even occur to me about there being a question. All right, folks, look, there's pain shooting down my leg now, so I'm going to have to...
sounds about right.
The sciatica is kicking in, and we've been... this is, I don't know what hour this is today of what we've been doing, but...
Matt, let's get high before tomorrow night's debate.
I definitely will be.
I would be so close to doing... Like... I've had some experience performing high back in my comedy days. And I just remember one time I went on stage. I got high. I went on stage, which I would rarely do, but it was a open mic night at Catch a Rising Star at like midnight. There was literally only like 10 people in there. And David Cross literally came from out of the audience to tackle me on stage. And I couldn't. Like
oh,
even
I would have loved
even
to be there for that.
Physically took me down to the ground. And even if I was not high, I would have had a hard time. Like, I don't know how to maneuver. I don't know how to like make this seem not weird. But I was so high that I don't know. That's it would hilarious. Almost like it rebounded and I actually sort of worked my way out of it.
So let's do that tomorrow.
So maybe we'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah, that sounds
all
good.
Right, folks.
Yeah.
Tonight. You can find us on twitch.tv/TheMajorityReport, or just go to majority.fm. We will have a link on the front page. Of course, if you follow us on Twitter, we will have links there, and check it out. We will be doing the same coverage And I think it was pretty fun.
People yeah, this seemed was to, fun.
People had, I'm not saying we had fun, but I think people had fun watching it.
Oh, of course yeah. We didn't have fun.
I enjoyed it.
I had fun at, all for about like 10% of it when relevant people were speaking. And then the rest was torturous.
I had more fun than I did during the Mueller hearings.
Oh, this is good too. Jake, your question is a Republican talking point. They went after, yeah, let's play this because this is, remember, this was a very successful tactic done by folks like Newt Gingrich and others in the Republican Party. But you didn't often see the front runners do it. And in some ways, the tables are a little bit turned in the context of the Democratic campaign. And so it's good that Sanders and Warren are in unison about this. Like, we're not going to let you use Republican framing for questions to Democrats.
They can't go to the doctor, and when they come out of the hospital, they go bankrupt. All right? What I am talking about, and others up here are talking about, is no deductibles and no co-payments. And Jake, your question is a Republican talking point. At the end of the day, and by the way, the health care industry will be advertising tonight on this program.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Warren, it's your turn.
Oh, can I complete that, please?
Your time is up, 30 seconds.
She's loving it.
With that talking point.
Senator Warren.
So we have to think of this in terms of the big frame.
I will say one other thing that is interesting, just from a performative basis. Sanders does yell there. He's yelling throughout for the most part. At one point when I think Tim Ryan says, you don't have to yell at me. Like Tim Ryan actually seemed hurt.
That backfired.
He totally. But Sanders went down. But I will say this. It's an interesting dynamic. I have been in studios where the cameras and the other people are far away from you. And here I have headphones, and so I know exactly I can calibrate how loud I'm speaking. When you're in front of a microphone and people are over there, like further away, there's a tendency to immediately to speak to those people in a voice that you think you need to project to them without a consciousness of the microphone. It's a skill he apparently just decides, like, I'm not going to learn that. Which is fine. And I think on some level, it probably works to his advantage again, because he has an image of this guy, but you will hear, they'll make a big deal of this. And I'll tell you right now, they have run this playbook before. I just don't think it's going to work.
They tried with Trump too, right? Like wheezing and kind of yelling and looming over Hillary, and people don't care about that stuff.
I mean, I think there is something to be said about some optics on some level, but the yelling in particular, they did with Howard Dean, and I just think that the savvy is different now.
Yeah, the people who like him like that he yells and is very frank with people.
And I suspect it's less about like the action and more about the narrative and how that works in media than the actual action.
For the people, that's right. The thing that I think has not caught up with certain generations, and that is that the performative aspect of being on television is not as important as it used to be. The content overrides that. I mean, I think that is, I have a much broader treatise than that is greater than even politics, but it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of different interesting things going
like
on.
These issues are worth yelling about, right?
I definitely think we're in an era where it's like, if you're not mad, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
And also, let's be honest here. Like, I'm just hearing, and that Chris Matthews is attacking Bernie on MSNBC. Like, you know, right. Optics and not yelling. I mean, sure.
All right, we're going to take a break for 24 hours, and we'll be back tomorrow night live. For the second night of the debate. See you then.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Feel any better. Yeah, I know. choice is made for the option where you don't get paid.